A very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 6th of October, Tuesday class. We will continue with our sharing from the Heart Sutta, second edition. We are at page 227, subsection 5.3.12. So the title is Understanding the Content of Consciousness. This is a continuation. After that, I will explain further. As usual, we will have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. So we will off the light. Then you can slowly get ready to begin your meditation. Always remember the first three of the four support. Relax into every mind state that arises. Relax body and mind. Be at ease completely. Free your mind. Don't think of anything. If thought arises, let it arise. Do not resist, do not suppress, or do not try to control or do anything. Just relax. Then maintain awareness. Just aware. Either consciousness make contact with the senses, it will arise the respective sense of consciousness. You can just maintain awareness, aware, finish. Don't continue with the thinking, don't try to know, don't create thought unnecessarily. Just relax, maintain awareness. Then the third support is 24-hour. Maintain awareness for as long as you can. Don't do anything. Don't try to know. Just stabilize the awareness nature until your mind becomes very quiet and very still. Don't do anything. The mundane mind or the thinking mind will slow down and return to its original state before the stirring, the thinking. Before the arising of thought. So you will realize your true mind. It will return to the natural state, which is your true mind, before the thought arises. And that is your meditative mind. Your true mind is your awareness nature within. That is the nature that you need to realize. And stabilize that. Where the awareness nature is very beautiful. That one can meditate. That is the meditative mind. That one is just aware without thought. That one is most beautiful. Awareness without thought is wisdom energy. That's why when you are aware, you can observe, you can understand many things. Through that choiceless awareness, you will understand everything. You can now relax body and mind and maintain some more attention. Then we will commence our sharing. Turn to page 227 of the Heart Sutta, second edition. We are at 5.3.12. Understanding the content of consciousness. But before we continue, we need to go back a little bit so that you understand. The chapter before, the subsection 5.3.12, is training the heedless or mundane mind to be heedful. 2 to 5, correct. 5.3.1. So this one is very important. You have to train this heedless thinking mind or mundane mind until it becomes heedful, means ever mindful and constantly meditative. So we were actually going through this whole section. Whole section, then we came to the part where at the end, where I say, that's why I say, the moment you can train your mind to be aware, that's only the beginning of real meditation, at the end here. Okay. That's why I said the moment you can train your mind to be mindful or aware, ever mindful, that's only the beginning of real meditation. Now you can understand what I meant. Last time, you all could not understand. Then there was a question from somebody. He said, Brother Teo, do you mean after attending all the retreats, if they don't develop the daily mindfulness until they are ever mindful, constantly meditating, they still haven't started the real meditation? Then I answer, yes. If you have not developed the stability of daily mindfulness, you haven't started the real meditation. Because you could not understand what sati is. So all your retreat training that you do, if you are gullible, you do without understanding, you didn't really train your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful and constantly meditative. That's why you cannot understand. And Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23 is very clear. The Buddha said, without heedfulness, you are as if dead. So verse 21 confirm everything. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless, the Buddha said. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. So that is precisely the meaning. Without heedfulness, there is no way you can understand spiritual teaching. Because without heedfulness, you are not mindful, you are not sensitive, you are not aware. And you have to have this heedfulness throughout the day in the midst of life. So it's not only when you are in the retreat doing formal meditation or having your retreat duration type of training that you are peaceful, aware, and have some form of maybe peace or inner peace and inner calmness and sometimes well-being. But that itself is of not much use if you cannot stabilize that sati or mindfulness until you can be heedful in the midst of life, ever mindful and constantly meditative. So this is the aspect of meditation that a lot of people cannot understand. And when you cannot understand that, you are not sensitive. You cannot see, you cannot understand, and you cannot awaken. Because that heedful mind is the meditative mind. And you need that mind throughout the day. You need to be in that state of stability, of heedfulness, or mindfulness throughout the day when you are awake. Okay, we'll go back to the 5.3.12. Now I read 5.3.12, then you can understand there is continuity. Otherwise, you cannot understand the first paragraph. Understanding the content of consciousness is the title. Then after that, I continue. Now, after you have developed the understanding of what heedfulness is and the importance of heedfulness, you can really laugh because that is the way of heedfulness. Where before you understand, you don't really understand what heedlessness is. So heedlessness is just like that. The mundane mind is just like that. And you cannot differentiate between the two. Your true mind and the thinking mind, which is also your mundane mind or your deluded sakyadity mind, with self-delusion. Then what else did J. Krishnamurti say? So awareness nature is your true mind, whereas the one with the thought process and the aggregates of mind is your mundane mind, your heedless thinking mind. Before you have the wisdom, this mundane mind is heedless. It doesn't have the Dhamma. It doesn't have right view. It doesn't have right understanding. It cannot develop the understanding of life. So heedfulness is very important. You need awareness or heedfulness to awaken, to develop the understanding, to straighten your view. Then we go on with the Krishnamurti quote, because his quote is very beautiful. J. Krishnamurti continued to explain. He said, awareness, on the other hand, is not self-induced, nor is it the outcome of a practice, because it is an understanding, which is wisdom, to understand what thought is and all the related problems that thought has created. So this awareness is not something we induce. It is not self-induced. Nor is it the outcome of practice. What is practice? Practice is mechanical. You keep on repeating something. That's why you practice. You practice how to play basketball, play badminton. Yeah? Practice how to serve shuttlecock, play table tennis. Then when you practice, you keep on doing until you become very skillful. And that is practice. Yeah. It's just like when you want to train your mundane mind, that one is you keep on repeating that training until it is mindful, aware. Then when it comes to awareness, you don't practice to be aware. You don't try to be aware, where it is not something for you to practice, where you lack understanding. The awareness is our nature. Before we start thinking, before we arise the thought, before we stir our mind and react to sense experience. So that is our true mind, true nature. We don't need to practice to have it. It was there all the time. The moment you are without thought, the awareness is there. But because you are heedlessly lost in thought, you didn't understand that there is a nature within that is aware. Because since birth until now, you are so conditioned by the thought process. The only instrument that you know is the thought, the thinking. And your thinking is so habitual. That's why we call it habitual tendency. You think a lot. You are hardly mindful. You are hardly aware. You are hardly relaxed and at peace without thought. You cannot be with the moment in peace without thought. That's the reason why most living beings who have not trained their mind, who doesn't have this understanding, cannot develop the meditation. So this awareness, on the other hand, is not self-induced, nor is it the outcome of a practice, but it is an understanding, which is wisdom. Because when you are aware, you develop understanding. You don't practice, you become awakened. You realize what truth is. You insight into phenomena. Then you realize the universal characteristic in every phenomena. So awareness is capable of insight, awakening, the realization. Because the awareness is without thought, it can observe. That silent, choiceless awareness can observe. And through that choiceless observation, it can develop understanding. even know, even know and understand what thought is and all the related movement of thought, all the problems created by thought, and all related problems that thought have created. So all this will be clearly seen by the one who is trained in awareness, by one who is heedful, sensitive. So what is it that we are observing? We are observing the content of consciousness. Consciousness without its content is the pure consciousness, or the pure awareness before the content goes in. The pure perception without the words and the concept, that direct seeing, that pure awareness of the reality. So this is all meditation. If you cannot understand this, is you have not developed the stability of mindfulness or awareness to understand what I share. Then now I will read on. The content of consciousness means the hidden as well as the superficial. That's why when we are aware, when we see thought, and we see the content of consciousness, how we input the content through our views, opinion, and conditioning, then we come to understand without right view, without wisdom, without the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara, you cannot actually develop the right way to act. All of action without right view is born of heedlessness, delusion. So memory is the words. Acting according to memory, which is full of your views, opinion, and your conditioning, including your scars of memory, your whatever fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, and even all of your experiences, psychological experiences, psychological emotion. So everything that is involving the psyche or the psychological memories, they are with delusion. Then when you accumulate them, they will condition wrong thought. Because without wisdom, you cannot arise the right thought. So acting according to memory is not acting at all. Because memory are full of not only views, opinion, and conditioning. It also have your belief system, your traditional belief, your rites and ritual. And all those conditioning that you receive while growing up from the media, from society, from your education system, from the social media and all those related things, even the environment, or whomever you develop knowledge from. These are all your views, opinion, and conditioning. This is knowledge. And knowledge is not wisdom. So you act according to memory, you are bound to make mistakes. Because it is a heedless living. But when you act according to wisdom or understanding, based on your understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence, which is the Dhamma way, right view with regards to law of karma, law of mind, and law of Dhamma, karma niyama, citta niyama, and Dhamma niyama. And then you understand with clarity, the right view. And when you have right view, you can act. So acting according to wisdom, or the wisdom that has the right view, is true action. So according to the teaching, the Buddha said, If you act following the Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So Noble Eightfold Path factor are very important, because Noble Eightfold Path is actually the meditation as taught by the Buddha. When you have cultivated the Noble Eightfold Path and have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path factor, then you are incapable of evil. You have right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, then right livelihood. Then you also have the four right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. Then you are very noble in all aspects of life. That's how Noble Eightfold Path can free you from suffering. So acting according to wisdom is acting following Noble Eightfold Path, which is incapable of negativity. So this is what meditation is all about, is to enable us to see the content of consciousness and understand clearly, who am I, what am I, then how I function as a human being, and why my mind stir and react to sense experience. How come the heedless living being, they act that way? Without wisdom, they become heedless. So you start to see all this and understand clearly the way of Dhamma. Then you start to straighten your view and you become so different. You become so beautiful. So this awareness is very important. Mindfulness, deep. Without this awareness or mindfulness nature within, you really can't see. And if you can't see, means you can't meditate. That's why to meditate is to be aware, choicelessly aware of the reality of what is. So when you understand this aspect of the teaching, which is meditation, then you will know how to develop it. Otherwise, you can't, you get stuck. Now we go back to the sharing the notes. I read again. Content of consciousness means the hidden as well as the superficial. So this content of consciousness, there are many layers. There are the superficial one where you can be conscious of and aware quite easily. Then the hidden one are the subconscious and the unconscious content. That one is not easy to see. That one needs stability of mindfulness, need wisdom, need understanding. So my sharing continue. I say, do you know what is the hidden one? The hidden is your subconscious and your unconscious content of consciousness. That one you cannot see. Whereas the superficial one is the conscious mind. So you have to develop the whole understanding of the whole content of consciousness, of that so-called thought, which is related to your so-called problems. When you grasp and cling deludedly to the thought, which is your five mental aggregates of form and mind, they will become grasping aggregate, and then suffering will arise. Like the Buddha say, upadana khandas, grasping aggregate. So your whole of suffering or problem which is related to the content of consciousness, both the hidden and the superficial, you must develop the understanding of it. Then the question is, how do you do it? According to J. Krishnamurti, he said, the surface must be understood first for the hidden to show itself. Surface means the superficial one. You must understand that first. For the hidden means the subconscious and the unconscious one to show up, because you can be aware. And this subconscious and unconscious, they only surface most of the time when you are about to sleep or you have gone into the relaxed state to sleep. Or sometimes when you just silence your mind to meditate, they can also surface. So when the chattering, the surface must be understood for the hidden to show itself. The hidden cannot be exposed if the surface mind is not quiet. This part is very important. That's why to meditate, you must be quiet. That's why I say silent, maintain awareness. When you are silent, you don't think. When you maintain awareness, you don't think. That's how you meditate. So you can only understand the hidden, or the hidden can only surface and be exposed if the surface mind, means the superficial mind, is quiet. So this part is very important. The hidden cannot be exposed if the surface mind or superficial mind is not quiet, means the conscious mind. So when the chattering is still going on, how can you meditate? Do you understand? The mundane thinking mind has to be quiet. Only then there is sati and samadhi. Then only you can meditate. So this sentence is very important. If you cannot understand this, you cannot meditate. So when your mundane mind is actively verbalizing, chattering, or doing the meditation through noting and other things, or having doubt, having a lot of verbalization, chattering within, then how can you meditate? You can't. So this part, once you understand that the mundane mind has to be quiet, silent, because without the thought, you are already aware, naturally aware. Only then there is sati and samadhi. That's why I ask you to relax and maintain awareness, means completely silent your mind. Sati is just a silent inner awareness, and samadhi is the stability of it. This sati and samadhi cannot, sorry for the very badly phrased English language. This sati and samadhi also haven't developed as yet. And you want to meditate. So this one, I think, can rephrase it. The English is not so English in its sense. It's more like a dialect form. Like the way we always speak. Sati and samadhi to abwe u. Then you want to meditate. Means you haven't even developed sati and samadhi, so how can you meditate? It should be this one. You haven't developed sati and samadhi. You haven't developed sati and samadhi. How can you meditate? So who meditates? The thought meditates. How can the thought meditate? When thought is active, there is no awareness-based meditation. You cannot be aware. You can only do one thing at a time. So it's very obvious, isn't it? If thought is meditating, means thought is actively doing things. And when the thought is active, how can you be silent and aware? You can't. So you contradict yourself. That's why thought-based meditation leads you nowhere. You are doomed. You can't see. You can't understand. Thought-based meditation leads to knowledge, reasoning, rationalization. So all this, you must see in the meditation, then you won't be gullible. Otherwise, you become gullible. Then after you have developed all this understanding, you will laugh at the stupidity of those who are heedless. In fact, a lot of Kayamita, they came to realize later that they are the same. Well, initially, they also went through that type of training, especially those who follow the Burmese tradition of doing the noting and the very active thought-based meditation. Not thinking, 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 pain, pain, pain. Then wondering, wondering, wondering. Then keep on verbalizing. Then even when they do anapanasati, the mind is active, breathing in aware, the verbalized word come out. No need, just relax, maintain awareness. Then when the breath arises, the awareness and the breath move as one, there is a deep. That's why the Buddha need to use word to explain to you, breathing in, away, just away, no need to do anything. Like standing away, walking away, sitting away, lying down away, the four posture. So bending, stretching, moving, all away. And putting on the shoulder cloth or whatever, your dress or what, away. Every action, every movement in the present moment, away. That is daily mindfulness. That is cultivating sati, training your mind to be in sati. Yeah. So this understanding is very important. Yeah. So with this understanding, we will continue. We'll move on. The spiritual faculties are still not developed. And you want to meditate. That's why you are wasting your time. Thought-based meditation has this problem where the thought is actively noting and labeling. Concept after concept. The next word explains it even better. Jai Krishnamurti explained to you how verbalization dulls the mind. Now, this one is very beautiful. So I will read on with the Jai Krishnamurti quote. The surface must be understood for the hidden to show itself. The hidden cannot be exposed if the surface mind is not quiet. Then we move on to the next section. So this one can be understood easily. 5.3.13. Silence the mundane mind to develop understanding. This is meditation. So you have to really silence the mundane mind to develop the understanding. That's why I ask you to relax and maintain awareness. Aware, finish. Don't try to know. Don't do anything. Don't verbalize. Don't chatter. The whole process of understanding the thought has nothing to do with the words, the verbalization, nor is it a matter of mere experience. Your experience is also a form of thought. Because experience is also from the thought. Because you need thought to develop experience. Who experience? The thought experience. Pleasant and unpleasant. Nice and not nice. Awareness doesn't experience anything. Because there is no word. There is no concept. It's just aware. Awareness before the knowing. Awareness have got no mental states, and there is no like or dislike. The experiencing come from the mundane mind. So the next word is, the English not so good again. So the next word is what? Verbalization. So the next word is verbalization. And verbalization indicates what, according to Jai Krishnamurti? Yes. Dullness of mind. And you all somehow go and note rising, rising, falling, falling, etc. to make your mind even more dull. But if you know how to do chanting, then it is different. Then it's not verbalization, it's chanting with awareness. The awareness and the vibration move as one. The vibration come out And the awareness is aware of it, which is not the thought noting another thought. When you are aware of thought, it is a different thing. It is sati itself. Thought will arise because upon contact it will trigger on. And there is an awareness which can be with the moment of contact. The moment of that arising of consciousness, just like what the Buddha said, in the seeing is just the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see. When sati is aware of the moment of consciousness, then it can understand how the mind, conditioned by its content of consciousness, move and stir from within. You can be with the moment to be aware of them all. That's why sati can see, and sati can see all the aggregates of thought or mind. But thought cannot see awareness. So this one is a very important understanding, because Krishnamurti said verbalization indicates dullness of mind. Really, if you keep on verbalizing, means you become mechanical, you know, repeating. So thought-based meditation has this problem. It will verbalize, it will chatter, it will talk to itself. Because it got nothing to do, then it'll start the heedless habitual thinking. Then because you lack spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance arise, hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why you will have all the mental hindrance of sensual desire, ill will, sleepiness, love and torpor. Then the worst is the fourth one, fear, worry, anxiety. So restlessness of mind is very often happening, because when you have problem, when you worry a lot, your mind becomes restless. When you have fear, when you have anxiety, your mind becomes restless. Then when you don't understand, there is doubt. Then you keep on questioning through the thought. Am I meditating correctly? Am I doing it correctly? Am I following instruction? Am I meditating? So all this are the pitfall of thought-based meditation. Thought-based meditation has this problem. So without understanding, you become gullible. You are trapped in thought-based meditation. That's why you look around almost everywhere. 90% of the teaching of meditation is all thought-based meditation. Hardly can you find anyone who can teach you awareness-based meditation. And this is very true. So sati has been wrongly interpreted. Sati has not been clearly understood. That's why this thought-based meditation comes about. The interpretation of the teaching, then the concept, the method, the technique, all this become meditation instead of understanding what clearly meditation is. Meditation is just an awareness, a choiceless awareness of the reality of what is. And Krishnamurti also knows, that's why he defined it so clearly, so well. And the Buddha always used the word sati, aware, relax, aware, silent. When you are aware, you are mindful. So the translation, the word mindfulness is not so proper, not so correct. That's why people fail to get the true understanding of what sati is. Sati is actually awareness before the knowing, before the arising of thought. The concept, the verbalization, the chattering, it is just a silent mind, completely without thought, without chattering and verbalization within. It's just that silent and just away. That's why I relax, maintain awareness, That is meditation. Don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. Stabilize that sati, that awareness nature, and realize that you have two mind. Your true mind is most beautiful. The awareness nature within. Stabilize that, and you will understand all things, and you can meditate. Okay, we continue from where we stop. Then the Jai Krishnamurti quote continue. He said, an experience being what? Experience is cumulative. Cumulative means what? Ah, yes, memory. You accumulate what you experience as memory. So this part is very beautiful. Right? Jai Krishnamurti quote. He said, experience is cumulative, so you tend to accumulate. So how you understand it? Because experience leads to memory. So memory, you accumulate what you experience as memory. That's why Mahayana Buddhism said the second noble truth is accumulation or qi. For us Theravada, we have the first noble truth, which is dukkha. Then samudaya, second noble truth, the causes arising of suffering. But under Mahayana, they didn't use the word causal arising of suffering. They say causal arising of suffering is accumulation. Whereas Theravada say is craving, both also correct. Accumulation is actually more deep the meaning, more easy to understand. Yeah. Craving, of course, is attachment, clinging, grasping, holding on. That's why if you don't cling, you don't grasp, you don't hold, you won't accumulate it. You accumulate because you give meaning. Then sometimes you accumulate without knowing that you have accumulated because of your phobia, your fear, or sometimes because of your excitement. So you tend to cling on to things, hold on to things. Then you tend to accumulate them. Whatever, you just accumulate. So whenever you accumulate that as memory, especially psychological memory, it becomes suffering. Because all of the thought that arise before you become enlightened, thought is respond to memory. So you will arise the wrong thought. Without wisdom, all these thought that arise from your memory, especially psychological memory, is all wrong thought. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. I have already explained what is memory, accumulation of experiences, good and bad. And what other thing you accumulate? Your psychological memory, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your scars of memory, your insecurity, your views, your opinion, your belief system, your tradition, everything that you hold on to, your unfinished business, all this you accumulate as memory, including your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, scars or memories. All these are your accumulated psychological memory, which are very harmful. They condition wrong thought, that condition your suffering. And what are these wrong thoughts? They have the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. That's why they are so powerful. So under the Mahayana teaching, Buddhism, they have this four noble truth, which they recite as Ku Ji Mie Tao. The first, third, and fourth is the same, match with Theravada. Only the second noble truth is a accumulation Ji. leading the memory is a cause of suffering, which is true, very, very true. Whereas the Theravada tradition, they translate it as craving, as the cause of suffering. So craving has three types, according to Theravada tradition. So this aspect of the teaching between Theravada and Mahayana is very important. You must make a note. So I read on, then you understand. The Mahayana never said the cause of suffering is craving. It said you continue to accumulate suffering. This is accumulation. So accumulation being cumulative makes for repetition. So Krishnamurti also understands that. So when you accumulate, it becomes habitual. You keep on repeating it, makes for repetition. Do you know why J. Krishnamurti say that? When you accumulate as memory, that is your downfall, because you cannot see that it's just a thought that you retrieve from memory or via memory. Then it will condition your craving, positive and negative craving, that you have that experience before. Let's say you come across some nice food or very beautiful experiences or very good meditative experiences. Then what happened? Next time when you do your meditation or when you eat something, you want to compare. And when you compare, you are making measurement. Through what? Again, through memories. Then you may say, wow, the last time at that shop, the food was very nice. Or my last meditation was so beautiful. Then you make a wish, how nice if I can repeat that experience. Then your meditation becomes what? You are more concerned about good and bad meditation experiences. Then what are you doing? Then where is your heedfulness? Where is your training? And where is the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation? That's how you get lost. That's how you lose your focus. Do you understand? Because you got distracted by the very peaceful and calm state of that meditative experience. That's why J. Krishnamurti said experience being cumulative makes for repetitiveness. So this one is easy to understand now. It means you want it to be repeated. That's how you develop habits. That's how you get into delusion. That's how you become afflicted. When things don't go your way, and when you cannot get what you want, suffering is the result. And that's one of the first noble truth reality that can condition one's suffering. And you still happily are playing with it, thinking that you are a hell lot of a great meditator. Wow, I want to meditate until I can get back that state. So now you start to understand why all these are actually foolishness and delusion, isn't it? So always remember, meditation is not to seek the beautiful mind states, or experiencing good and bad meditative experiences. The sole intent and purpose of meditation is to develop wisdom, to awaken the insight into phenomena. And to do that, you need to be mindful, you need to be aware. Without mindfulness, without awareness leading to heedfulness, you cannot meditate. That's why I always remember, unless you are heedful throughout the day, you don't stand a chance. The real meditation cannot come about. So all of the retreat that people go, or so-called meditation session or training that people do without understanding does not lead them anywhere. You know, most people I came to know, they even confirmed this with me and report to me. They said, Brad Teo, what you say is very true. I have been in and out of meditation for so long, some 20, 30 years, some 30, 40 years. And they realize every time they have problem, they go to retreat and become calm and peaceful. And maybe they think they have got it, more mindful. Then they thought they have insight, they have wisdom and all those things. But then, when they come back to daily life, they still experience problem in life. Their mind, they realize, still react to sense experience. They can still get angry, unhappy, fearful, stressed. They still have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. Then what is going on? What is all those meditation about? It means it doesn't lead to wisdom. It doesn't root out the evil roots. It doesn't straighten their view. It doesn't transform them character-wise, understanding-wise, personality-wise. That's why they don't know how to act. They don't have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path. They are still very crude in all aspects of life. They have a lot of knowledge. They have a lot of experiences. But these are not meditation. Meditation is to have the silent mind that is choicelessly aware to observe clearly the truth and the reality, to observe what is. When you can do that, you really awaken. You can insight into phenomena. You can develop the understanding. Then you can straighten your view and you can root out the delusion and the ignorance. Then you become different. Personality-wise, character-wise, understanding-wise, you transform. You become different. Then you understand life. You understand clearly who are you, what are you. Then life becomes meaningful, beautiful. Then everything becomes different. That's real meditation. Not more knowledge, more experiences. If you think that is meditation, you are being gullible, foolish. But thought-based meditation leads to knowledge, leads to experience, leads to the ego being boosted. So the danger of thought-based meditation is it can lead to psychic ability. It can lead to a lot of knowledge, a lot of experiences that they believe is very unique to them. And they thought because they are capable of those experiences, they thought they are enlightened. But enlightenment has nothing to do with experience. Enlightenment is an understanding, is a wisdom, awakening. So all this understanding is very useful, very important. That's the reason why I always emphasize meditation has to be done with understanding. Without understanding, you cannot meditate. And this understanding is not easy to come by, especially awareness-based meditation. So hopefully, with all this sharing, by now, all of Kayamita or Cultivator of the Way, after hearing this, hopefully you all will awaken. You all will not become gullible anymore. So don't cling on to knowledge and experience. Don't cling on to all the methods and the technique or skillful means, where they are not the meditation. The real meditation starts from training your mind to be heedful. That's it. Then after that, use it to meditate. So whatever skillful means or method and technique that you use is just an initial skillful means to train your mind to be aware. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. leading to heedfulness. That's it. So the method and the technique is just a skillful means to train the mind. It's a series of instruction. In fact, it's still thought-based. That's why it's repetitive. That's why method and technique is repetitive. So if you understand, then you will not be gullible. Then you will not cling on to method, techniques, and teacher. You will develop clear understanding of the Buddha's teaching. What did the Buddha actually teach? He started off by giving the advice to all the monks. Dhammapada was 21, followed by 22, 23. And before he passed away, again he repeated, strive on with heedfulness. Do not be heedless. That's the only message before his parinibbana. So everywhere the teaching clearly points out to you the importance of mindfulness or heedfulness. Without heedfulness, you are as if dead. The heedless are as if dead. So heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So have this clearly understood. Then Dhammapada verse 22 actually strengthened Dhammapada verse 21. The Buddha went on to say, distinctly understanding the big difference between heedlessness and heedfulness, the wise one will intend on heedfulness. And when they do that, they will rejoice in the rhyme of the Aryas, means they will be reborn as Aryas, the enlightened one. That's why they will surely become enlightened. Then Dhammapada verse 23 confirmed everything. He said, the constantly meditative and ever mindful and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme born-free Nibbana, which is the enlightenment in the here and the now. So not only is it important to understand his teaching, it's also very important to develop clear understanding of what this heedfulness is. So Dhammapada verse 23 is heedfulness, because he said, if you are constantly meditative, ever mindful, then you stick on to these two cultivation, the steadfast one. They will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana, in the here and the now. So, in order to guarantee enlightenment, it must be heedfulness. Otherwise, what else can it be? That's why heedfulness has two parts. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. So when you train your mind to be mindful, that is the first step. Then you stabilize it to become ever mindful. That is the beginning of heedfulness. When you are ever mindful, then only can you meditate. So to be able to have the ability to constantly meditate, you must be ever mindful. So ever mindful, constantly meditative is heedfulness. Combine the two. So all meditation needs this understanding to start. So you ask yourself, what am I doing in the name of meditation? Most people are gullible. They follow instruction without understanding. They are not clear about what is it that they are trying to develop. They only been told, you do this method, this technique, one day you will become enlightened. People are so gullible, and people believe because they claim that this method and this technique lead to vipassana. If you don't do this method, this technique, it don't lead to vipassana. As if vipassana is a method, is a technique. Vipassana has nothing to do with method and technique. Vipassana is an awakening. Vi is the three characteristics of nature, anicca, dukkha, anatta. Passana is to insight into these three universal characteristics. How can you use thought? Thought is incapable of insight. You need to silence your mind to be in that state of awareness. silent choices awareness to insight, to awaken. To have the direct seeing, to see things as they are and awaken. So this understanding is very important. Then you know how to meditate. Then you will not be gullible. You will not be trapped. Then when you go for any session or meditation, you have to be very, very clear, very focused. Am I training my mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful? Then to develop the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation is constantly meditating. We have Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So if you are doing this too, then you are really training your mind to develop heedfulness, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path leading to meditation. That is what you're supposed to do. Then the three turning. You have to go through it. You have to listen to Dhamma. You have to reflect, contemplate, and inquire into Dhamma. Then you have to silence your mind to develop the meditative training to arise at the turning wisdom, which is Bhavana Maya Panya. Wisdom born of the meditative training, the direct seeing. The mind is in sati. We are cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path, including the four foundations of mindfulness. Then the other very good check or reference is the Avijja Sutta, the 10th step of the Avijja Sutta. That 10th step is very clearly defined and it links the whole teaching together. That's why the Buddha's teaching is very complete, but very few people have the understanding. They cannot link, they cannot connect all the essential Dhamma. They are actually one teaching, not separate teaching. The essential Dhamma evolve out of the Four Noble Truths. Everything is summarized under the Four Noble Truths. That's the reason why I say the essence of the Buddha's teaching is the Four Noble Truths. These are noble truths that can awaken you, make you noble ones or enlightened ones. And when you understand the essence of the Buddha's teaching, you understand life. You understand the secret of life. You know how to live life. Because within this Four Noble Truth is summarized to us all of life, both the mundane and the supramundane. Who else has this ability except the Samasa Buddha? Then you will start to see how wise a being he is, how virtuous a being he is, how fantastic a teaching he can come out with. So complete and yet so simple. Four Noble Truths. The three turnings and the 12 mode or aspect. They are so beautiful, so complete. Then all of the essential Dhamma that he shared later, they are spin-off from all this. For Noble Truth, especially Noble Eightfold Path. So, wherever there is this Noble Eightfold Path, the Buddha before his parinibbana answered somebody's question. He said, where that person want to know, how do we know that they are enlightened beings? He said, as long as there is this Noble Eightfold Path in this world, the world will not be free without enlightened beings. That's why he don't say as long as Buddhism is around. No need. This Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is true action. Because this Noble Eightfold Path is incapable of evil, full of right view, wisdom, that condition all the appropriate noble qualities, right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then the four right effort to constantly purify and transform. Then Samasati and Samasamadhi. They are so beautiful spiritual faculties that can awaken the living being. That can develop the clear understanding, the insight, the direct seeing, the awakening. So these are all very beautiful understanding. Hopefully with this, you can maybe develop clear understanding and not be gullible anymore. Okay, we will continue with our sharing. We go to the next section. 5.3.14. Yes. Awareness is not determination. This is very good. So the next line of Jaya Krishnamurti is, awareness is not a matter of determination. You cannot determine to be aware or want to be aware. Because who determine? The thought determine. For purposive direction is resistant. Means when you arise a thought with a will to direct it, then that is purposive direction. And purposive direction is resistant. Yes, you want it that way. And because thought direct, it means you want things your way. That's why you resist. That's why I say you have to accord and flow if you want to be free. Now you understand, huh? Accord and flow means what? You don't insist on your way. You don't direct. You don't want things your way. You look at condition. And condition is such, you accord and flow. That's why you become beautiful. The line of risk. Zero resistance. I wouldn't call it least resistance. The line of zero resistance is to accord and flow. Like Tai Chi. You flow with it. You move with it. So this aspect of understanding is very important. That's why you were resist. That's why I say you have to accord and flow if you want to be free. Meditation is not about resisting anything. You just relax, silence your mind, maintain awareness, accord and flow, and be with the moment. Then you will be beautiful and you will understand. Be with the moment is very important. To be really relaxed and silent is very beautiful. And its meaning is very deep. I don't think many people understand. If you have gone into meditation deep enough, you will understand what I mean. When you are completely relaxed and without any mental intention to direct anything, you become sensitive. Then the awareness is so beautiful. It can feel, it can understand, it can be with the moment. It can develop clarity, sensitivity. And sometimes, because there is no thought involved, this awareness moves by itself. That nature meditates by itself. That's why that is called trust. That it will just cause things to arise and transform. Those who do the fourth support trust, they will understand what I say. That you can really relax and maintain awareness. That is the most beautiful experience a meditator can have. The mind is so soothing, so beautiful, so fluid. It's just like water flow without resistance. Accord and flow. Without even the words. So beautiful. Then that meditation within that silence and that stillness is so beautiful. You can't describe it. Because it's beyond words, beyond thought. It's so beautiful, really. So having that ability to develop the understanding is very important. Then we go on back to the sharing just now. Okay. Then Jaya Krishnamurti continue, which tends towards exclusiveness. What does that mean? The egoic mind wants that the me and the I can do this, implies very exclusive. I already improved. My meditation is already not bad. And all these are the thought telling you. So that's why when you determine, then there is a direction, there is a goal where you want to walk towards. You want to seek that type of meditative experience, thinking that it has transformative power that can make you enlightened. That's why the moment you want to be an arahant, you are dead. Because the becoming kills your spirituality. You want to become? Oh, sorry. Who wants to become? The thought wants to become. And becoming is craving. The moment you have craving, you cannot realize the enlightenment. So that one is very obvious. Eh? Then the next section is 5.3.15. The awakening. This one is more interesting. Eh? The awakening. So don't try to become anything. Just silence your mind and sincerely, patiently cultivate. Then you will awaken. The key word is don't try to know. Eh? You must bear in mind. Eh? Don't try to know. The moment the mundane mind awakens and realizes itself and sees, that's wisdom. And when wisdom arises, there is no more delusion. That's why you could see things as they are. You awaken to the three universal characteristics of nature. There is no more delusion. And thought will have no power, no more power over you. Then you can see things as they are, which is the direct seeing, means you can see beyond thought, beyond time. Otherwise, you will continually use thought, which is psychological time. Then you will be trapped in time and trapped within the field of thought. So the silent mind without thought is timeless. That's why there is no psychological time involved. And this timeless awareness is very beautiful, where there is no psychological time. It's like everything becomes so still. But there is an awareness, that nature is there. But there is no word, nothing. That's why it can be with the moment, silent inner awareness. Then that nature is just peace, awareness, tranquility, stillness, silent. That's why the mind that is hateful is so beautiful. It's no longer heedless. It's full of love, full of joy, full of understanding. That's why it can be silent. It doesn't need anything. It doesn't need to move. It doesn't need to think. It just stay there. Then the moment is so pristine, so beautiful, so wonderful. So the one that has awakened, the mind is different. The mind is always heedful, aware. But because the five aggregate of form and mind, they are still connected, they still exist, together with this wisdom that prevents the form and mind from being deluded. So this form and mind, which is a five aggregate of form and mind, namarupang, this one becomes non-grasping, beautiful. That all of your aggregate is non-grasping, is without delusion. All of your senses become non-grasping. Every moment of perception, sankhara activity or consciousness is all non-grasping. Every moment of feeling is non-grasping. Then because of the wisdom, it doesn't have any more sakyadity, self-delusion, even though the physical body doesn't belong to him. But it knows it is not a permanent unchanging entity. that you can cling on to, hold on to, and grasp on to, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. There is no more such delusion, self-delusion, Sakkaya-ditti, no more. Once Sakkaya-ditti rooted out, you awaken. That's why the five aggregate of form and mind, you can understand and you can see clearly their non-grasping nature. Because of wisdom, nothing else, nothing frees the mind except wisdom. So this part is most important. Yeah? Okay. Oh, 10 o'clock. Huh? Maybe we stop here. The next one is the mystery of life unfold. Huh? You go back and read first, then prepare yourself so that you can develop a better understanding when I share it. Huh? So we stop at page 230, huh? 5.3.15. Huh? So the next session we will start with 5.3.16. So now we can open up for second session. Huh? So as usual, we will open up for meditation reporting and also at the same time Q&A. If you got any question, you have any question regarding meditation and the teaching, you can come in. Then you can also share on the topic Dhamma in daily life. So this Dhamma in daily life is very useful, how you apply the Dhamma in daily life, because life itself is our greatest teacher. We can apply the Dhamma in daily life while doing your cultivation, living your life. Everything is Dhamma. That's why you can see them, you become beautiful, then you can share them. Okay, we will open up. You can just come in. Ah, yes,
yeah. So, yeah. Brother, actually, I want to ask a question.
Okay.
At the beginning of this Appendix 3, we were talking about four foundations of mindfulness and seven factors of enlightenment.
Yes.
You know, so that prompted me to go and search this 37 factors of enlightenment.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So remember last time you gave a series of talks in class. So actually, I found all the 37 factors, and then I look at this. There's five spiritual faculties, and then after that, followed by why there is a five spiritual, five powers.
Yeah, it's repeated. The spiritual faculty repeated because five spiritual faculty can be cultivated at two levels. Initially, it's the ordinary spiritual faculties, the one that people develop before their faith become very strong. So Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya are the five spiritual faculties. So this one, initially, when you start your cultivation, they are weak. They are not strong. Then as you develop more understanding, it become more stable, more stable. Until one day, when your cultivation has progressed to such a level where you have a lot of confidence in the Buddha, you have investigated the Dhamma, then you have a lot of joy, then you have a lot of virya, then your faith becomes unshakable. That is the time your spiritual faculty starts to stabilize. When your spiritual faculty of Saddha and Virya becomes so strong because you have investigated the Dhamma, you have cultivated correctly, then they stand out to investigation, then it drives you to cultivate. And your faith is so strong. So Saddha and Virya become unshakable. Then when you have that, your Sati will also become unshakable. Your daily mindfulness will stabilize. Then your Samadhi will also become powers, stabilized. Once you have all these four spiritual faculty as balas or power, you are destined for enlightenment. Because these are the spiritual faculty that can enable you to understand spiritual teaching. So when you build them up and become very stable, you awaken very fast. You continuously insight into phenomena, you continuously develop understanding of the Dhamma, then you will see everything very clearly. Everything is Dhamma. Then your wisdom keep on arising until it also become balanced, very stable, unshakable. So that's the second aspect of the five spiritual faculty they call balanced. Understand?
Yeah, this is we always chanted, you know, until my five spiritual
faculties.
So I didn't know that. This is one of the. This is in the five. In the 37 factors.
It's part of the 37 factors. So these five repeated, it become 10 within the 37 factors of enlightenment. Then to share some more on the 37 factors of enlightenment, you must understand why the Buddha specifically take out the seven main ones, Satta, Bhujanga, the seven main factors of enlightenment. Because when you meditate, these seven main factors of enlightenment, they are the one that can awaken, give rise to third turning wisdom. That's why we have the first factor of enlightenment, again, sati is repeated. So within the 37 factor of enlightenment, sati appear many places. The five spiritual faculty, the two set already have sati. Then these seven factors of enlightenment again has sati. Then Noble Eightfold Path again has sati. Then the four foundation of mindfulness again has sati. Noble Eightfold Path, everything has sati. So sati is a common, very vital enlightenment factors. So the seven core factor of enlightenment or main factor of enlightenment, the Buddha call it Satta Bhujanga, are very important. First, you must have sati, the Buddha said. Means mindfulness, awareness. Otherwise, you cannot develop the second factors of enlightenment. Because the second factor of enlightenment is to investigate the Dhamma, to see whether it's the truth, to see whether his teaching stand up to investigation, to see whether his teaching conform with nature's law. So this Dhamma Vichaya, which is the second factor of enlightenment, is Dhamma investigation. You can only investigate with mindfulness, with awareness. You cannot investigate with a thought, through knowledge, through thinking, through rationalization. So now you start to understand why, when you start to reason, you start to analyze, you cannot develop wisdom. Because there is the thought, the knowledge, the mundane mind. There is no awareness. That one comes from memory. Your views, your opinion, your conditioning, and your accumulated memory, which are not wisdom, not right view. So Dhamma investigation needs sati. That's why without sati, you cannot investigate Dhamma. When you cannot investigate Dhamma, you cannot confirm whether the Buddha's teaching is true or not. So when you cannot confirm, you cannot develop the saddha, the faith. And when there is no faith, how can there be virya? But when you are able to investigate the Dhamma through sati and realize that all this essential Dhamma or teaching of the Buddha, they point towards the truth when they stand out to investigation, then your faith becomes very, very different. It's strengthened. When it's strengthened, it becomes unshakable. Then when this faith is unshakable, it will drive you to cultivate. That's why your virya become very strong. That's how the enlightenment factor move. From sati, it move on to Dhamma investigation, then it move on to virya. Then when there is virya, it will drive you to cultivate sati even more diligently. Then when sati stabilize, then you experience piti. That's why piti is a form of enlightenment factor, spiritual joy, spiritual calmness, spiritual peacefulness, or they call it sometimes rapture, spiritual rapture. I always pronounce it wrongly. Then after that, you're supposed to develop positive. This is where a lot of people go wrong. They go and develop pity, leading to sukkang. Pity is an enlightenment factor, it's okay. But they cling on to the blissfulness. Then from the jhanic factor, those who do jhana, the jhanic factor is applied thought, sustained thought, piti, sukkang, then ekagata, straight away, they miss out positive. So, initially, applied thought is vitaka. Then, sustained thought is vichara. Then you experience piti when you don't think, when you sustain the one-pointedness thought there, then it becomes there is hardly any thought movement, means you concentrate, you develop samatha, energy field, you focus, then no more thought. Then you experience calmness, piti. Then after that, you experience blissfulness. They attach, they cling. Then after that, they go into one-pointedness, ekagata. They hold the thought, kill the thought until no thought. So that's how they develop the energy field, jhana. Then they push it out. They develop the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, until the eighth jhana. So all these are energy field, thought-based meditation. And they really miss out on paucity. Well, paucity is not energy field. Paucity, according to the teaching, is just tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, or the silent mind, your true mind. That's why the English translation is quite accurate. They use the word tranquility of mind, but hardly anybody understands it. It's in fact tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, your true mind. That is the state that the mind enters the deep. That's why I realize it when I develop it. Until my anapanasati becomes so calm, so still, so subtle, until no more movement. Then I didn't go and do sitting touching. I didn't do all those things. My nature, no. I straight away silent everything and stay at that nostril area. I didn't move. I continue to relax and maintain awareness. Then all of a sudden, the subtle breathing, like no more breathing, come back to me, you know. Then I realize, hey, this awareness become more refined. It can detect that very, very fine or subtle breathing. There is hardly any movement at all, but I can stay there and maintain the awareness. Then later on, I realize I can move this mind that is in sati. Wherever I locate it, it becomes very sensitive. Then I realize this mind has entered sati. Then when I come out of the meditation, or even before I come out of the meditation, when I start to do any movement or activity, I realize that sati, the mind that has entered sati, is fully aware. It's like magnified. Then when I came out of it, kaya nupasana was like automatic. Naturally, the mind that has entered sati can see. Then I realized later on, every moment of seeing is in sati. Smell, taste, tactile of thought process is in sati. Every moment of hearing is also in sati. Your mind has entered sati. That's why the specific phenomenal awareness keep on arising. Then I can completely silence everything without a center, the spacious awareness that nature surface. That's why a lot of people don't understand this and they got trapped. They didn't develop until paucity arise. They go and develop jhana. They focus and develop samatha, concentration, energy field. That's why don't cling and attach to all this beautiful mind state like sukkang, which is very blissful. You can experience it, no problem, but continue to relax into it. The ultimate aim of meditation is to develop the wisdom, the awakening, the enlightenment. So when you are in pasati, that is your true mind. That is when sati stabilizes, become more refined, and mind has entered sati. Mind that has entered sati is very beautiful. It has stability of awareness. It's tranquil, it's just still. Then when you continue to stabilize pasati, it becomes samadhi. This mind that is in tranquility and stillness becomes collected and unwavering. That's what samadhi is all about. Then at every moment of sense experience, this mind is collected and unwavering means what? It means it can see things as they are. It does not stir because it's collected, it's unwavering. But when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel or think of something, if your mind don't have samadhi initially, what happened? It will stir, it will react. That's why it cannot be in that state of clarity, peacefulness. It cannot be in that state of pasati to see things as they are, where your mind has stirred, reacted, wavered, no longer collected. That's the reason why initially it has to have samadhi to allow that pasati, tranquility of mind, silent mind, the quiet, still mind, choiceless awareness, to see things as they are, to awaken. Then when it awakens, the wisdom is there. Then when the wisdom is connected to the form and mind, then you don't need that samadhi anymore, technically. Then the last factor of enlightenment is equanimity, born of wisdom. The mind does not stir or waver anymore because of equanimity, where wisdom has arisen. So equanimity takes over samadhi. You don't need samadhi anymore. But the samadhi enlightenment factor is needed before equanimity can arise. So that's how the seven factors of enlightenment fall into place and become very beautiful. Okay, Adeline? Can follow, eh? Yeah. Adeline? Is it clear?
Yeah, it's much clearer nowadays. More not thought based, in the meditation also, you know, you can see, you know, when you are falling on your thoughts, you see the suffering.
Yeah.
More and more, like you want to, you know, just stay on your so-called
through
mind or sati.
Yeah, just let
you
things
feel be. There's more peace.
Just let things be. Yeah. No need to think. That's not. Think also like that. Don't think also like that. Then why you think?
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to live life, you have to arise a thought. So when you have wisdom, you can arise the right thought. That is beautiful. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is about right thought. But when you don't have right view and wisdom, you cannot arise right thought. That's why you have problem. That's how people develop suffering, misery, because they lack wisdom. Yoniso manasikara, understanding. So Dhamma understanding is very important. Without wisdom, the initial wisdom, the fourth step of the Avijja Sutta, you cannot develop stability of daily mindfulness. Step 5, sati sampajana cannot come. Without step 5, you cannot be heedful throughout the day. That's why you cannot develop the awakening. So step 6, step 7 cannot come about. Step 6 is sense restraint, automatic. When you have sati sampajana, daily mindfulness and clear comprehension, sense restraint is automatic because your mind has transformed. It has become heedful, ever mindful throughout the day, every moment, every instant of your waking moments. So because of that, sense restraint is possible. When you have sense restraint, means you can keep your precept. You cannot break your precept anymore. Then you can arise the three type of right conduct or wise conduct. So noble eightfold power factor of right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood become automatic. So the three way of right conduct is your right thought, right speech, and right action. Yeah. When you do your action and speech is right livelihood or living. That's why the three way of right conduct is the noble qualities of enlightened being. By then you are at least a sotapan or a sakadagami. First stage of sainthood or second stage of sainthood. Then after that, you can cultivate step 8, which is the four foundation of mindfulness. Then you will transform and awaken. Then step 9, 7 factors of enlightenment keep on arising. Then after that, you realize the enlightenment. Then you are at least an anagami. Otherwise, without the minor conceit and all those subtle defilement, you would have become an arahant. So that's how the whole teaching comes about. Okay? Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah.
Do you have any more questions or anything else to share?
No, that's about all.
Okay. Sadhu, rejoice. Thank you so much. Let us rejoice with a good question. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So today's sharing is very good. It explains very clearly what is thought-based meditation and what is awareness-based meditation. By now, I think most Kayamita would have developed that clear understanding. So what you need to do is to put it into practice and cultivation. Means you must really put it into cultivation to realize that true mind, to understand that meditation is about training the mind to be heedful, ever mindful, stabilize the daily mindfulness. When you are heedful, then you can meditate. Then when you can meditate, you become very beautiful. Then throughout the day, you are different. Then that daily mindfulness, when it's stabilized, it will transform your understanding. Sense restraint, everything become automatic. Everything fall into place. Then you will see very clearly what awareness-based meditation is all about. Like Huining said, the first hallmark is no thought. So to meditate, you must realize the state of no thought. Means aware, silent, without thought. Then stabilize it. Then develop the wisdom to have no mark. No mark of a self cultivating, no mark of living being, no mark of life and Dhamma. Then after that only you can reach the third stage of Huining's hallmark teaching. The last one is when you are able to go beyond no thought, no mark, then your mind can be in the state of without dwelling. No dwelling. It doesn't dwell anymore. Where it's just aware. Awareness cannot dwell. Awareness is just awareness. It doesn't dwell. It doesn't cling. It doesn't hold. It doesn't grow. We understand. It just echo and flow with nature's condition. And everything is just the way it is. Suchness. The isness of things. Ta-ta-ta. Everything becomes so beautiful. So clear.